You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 24th, 2009. This is episode 77, Twitter and the TWAS Room. We begin again with another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast, and as usual, we have our once a month confab of those who are interested in classroom technology, and as usual, Sally Draper is joining us from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Welcome to summertime. Seems like we're getting slammed with some warm weather these days.
Finally hit. Now, officially, the first day of summer was last Sunday, Father's Day, but we really had a late one this year, so I was really happy to see I love the warm weather. So you probably do, too, being from Mississippi.
Yep, I'm happy with it. The humidity levels here in Sleepy Hour are approaching Mississippi humidity today. We even have a heat warning out. So
is that right?
Yep, wow. Serious stuff going on here.
And in our pre-show conversation, Gail Potratz was complaining about the heat. Good morning, Gail.
Sally, do you have air conditioning?
I do have air conditioning. Yeah. How about you, Gail?
That's a difference.
I don't.
So no. It's a little warm up in New London, where Gail hails from, at least for the last... How many years, Gail, have you been there?
Oh, my goodness. 20 plus.
Okay. So you're used to it at this point. But Gail is our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. She joins us for this classroom technology podcast that we have each month, and we're very happy to welcome her back. And the subject for today is a very timely one. Obviously, it has some relevance in the classroom or we wouldn't be talking about it, but we're going to, again, return to the topic of Twitter, but with a very focused look at its use in education.
That's right, Martin. I think that Twitter has a lot of different flavors. It's been in the news a whole lot lately with the whole Iran conflict and everything. But how you choose to use your Twitter account, particularly if you're a teacher, can really pay off in terms of connecting you with amazing resources that are out there and giving you basically a one-to-one relationship with some really cutting-edge technology-driven teachers that are doing some really cool things in their classrooms.
Right. I am by no means a Twitter spurt or whatever you call a Twitter expert. There are all kinds. I was really surprised when we were doing some of the research for this show, all of those tools that are very specific to use of Twitter in a school setting for teachers, especially both on the just in the in-classroom experience side, but also on the personal learning network side, just learning about all the things that are out there in the Twitter sphere, so to speak, for teachers. And Gail, I know dived into a lot of the resources that are out there, and we've got just a bunch of stuff to share today. So maybe, Gail, start with your experiences with Twitter in the classroom and as a teacher.
Well, my experiences with Twitter started about a year ago when I installed it on my computer and just to see what it was all about, and really didn't think I'd find much use for it because it's hard for me to say only 140 characters at a time. Mm-hmm. That's just not me.
Right.
I guess there's an application that takes care of that now. I have to look into that. There's a Twitter Longer or something, kind of an add-on. So
where it gives you a shorthand or what?
No, it gives you an opportunity to like continue on. So if people are interested after 140 characters, they can click and go on.
Kind of the rest of the story, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Okay. Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose, though?
Well, I don't
That's
know.
That's like a blog, Gail.
I guess.
All right.
I try to be brief. But that's how I got into it. I didn't really think I would see the advantage. But the advantage is in the networking with all the wonderful people you meet out there in education, which is my primary purpose. As a teacher, I'm looking for educational things and usually connected to technology, but not always. Mm-hmm. And like our pastors could be interested in, you know, communicating with other pastors about things through this. You kind of build your network around your niche area, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. You can, but it gets to the point where you have to wade through so much stuff sometimes. I'm very selective. The longer I've been in it, the more selective I am about, you know, you get these notes from people that would like to follow you.
Sure.
So I look at their bio, but I don't accept them all. I really don't want to have to clean people out all the time later. So mm-hmm. I don't feel bad about not accepting everybody.
Right.
I'm just trying to build a good network to, you know, serve my educational needs.
Now, Gail, Gail, do you think you're kind of unique in amongst Wells teachers at this point, or do you see that as something that's growing within the teachers of our Synod, the Twitter users?
I'd really like to find that out. I'd really like to know how many. I once put a post on the hashtag for Wells Tech and asked, you know, how many other teachers are out there, because I don't know. I know Jason Schmidt, whom we're going to be talking with later in the podcast, and I have teachers from other places, but from Wells, I really don't know of many that they may be out there, but I don't have them on my list, and I certainly like to have them.
Mm-hmm.
So we could put a call out there for people
maybe
who would like to.
Maybe this podcast will change all that. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I think Jason's going to be talking about the fact that he got into it basically for the same reasons and then found all the wonderful resources that were out there. And once you see all the resources, then you get into using them. And at this point, I'm primarily using this for my own benefit and the teachers that I serve. I pass things along to them all the time. And build our little network of help things here. But I don't really use it in the classroom. In the past several months, I've been investigating how to use it in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So next year will be my first attempt now. I do have some things planned that I want to get started with kids in the mm-hmm. classroom using Twitter.
Okay. You mentioned resources. Maybe we should just talk about a few of those from the very basic, for maybe those people that are wondering, scratching their head like you were maybe a year ago, why, you know, why mm-hmm. Twitter, down all the way to the more serious resources that are available out there. So maybe we can talk about a few of those.
Right. In the show notes, there's a resource called K-3 Teacher's Guide to Twitter, and I use that one. There's a zillion of them out there, but this one is written pretty much like an elementary teacher would write and mm-hmm. would explain. And so it's a really good entry into Twitter if you've never done it before. So if you want to start somewhere, I think that's a good place to start. And that's the basics of how to. The other article I had posted there was 9 Reasons to Twitter in School, which is also, I think, worth a read if you want some philosophy about why people think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they think it's a good idea because it helps kids to connect with other people, you know, the 21st century skills, connection, collaboration, and communication definitely goes on there. Also, collecting data, it's kind of a cool way to collect data, and that's how I intend to use it next year. There's an example, and in the show notes, I believe it's in there. Let's see. the example, Sally, where the teacher and her daughter used it for a math example. Did we include that?
I'm sure we can. Yeah.
Okay. Because that one was really, their site is called TechCheck. And they gave a very good example of how they went out and they Twittered for a certain piece of information. I can't remember now what it was, but it could be what's the temperature right now where you're living, what geographic place are you located at, what are your chances that you're going to see a deer today in your location, just different things like that, and then you can collect data, and there are a lot of applications for, you could use it to teach graphing, how to use data, and there's some other cool applications connected with that as well, where you can turn these into visual images, representations of the data. So I'm kind of excited about that.
I see that link, Gail, and we will definitely make sure we put it in the show notes. It's techchicktips.net.
Right.
So we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Right. I think that's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Sally.
I was just going to say, so if you've gotten started and you know, you've referenced a couple of really great resources to help people get started. They kind of are exploding all over the internet these days, that there's a lot of Twitter and education resources. So, you know, pick your flavor. Basically, then the power lies in not just following someone who's telling you what they're eating for breakfast each day, but following the right people. And I think Jason even alludes to that when we talked to him, that building up that directory of who you're following is really powerful. And there's some links and things that we'll include with Jason's interview that kind of speak to that. But once you have that, then you have a lot of information flowing into you, you know, links for great manipulatives that teach physics, or links to classroom literature, you know, resources, or whatever it is. People are constantly pointing you to just amazing resources. What I found is it's almost overwhelming to keep it all organized. How do you do that, Gail? How do you manage all the stuff that comes into you?
Okay, good question. Before I answer that, I have to mention two other resources that people wouldn't want to miss. One of them is 25 Ways to Use Twitter in the Classroom. And that is contributed to by a lot of the people from the website that Jason's going to be talking about. And that's got some excellent classroom ideas, so that we'll want to include. And also the Directory of Learning Professionals on Twitter is another good one for finding people. So that being said, what do I do with the stuff when I get it? Okay, so something comes across Twitter and I see it. I open up the link and I look at it and I think, wow, I know just what I'm going to do with this. Or, the third grade teaches such and such. That's a resource they could use. So I have several things I do. And one, I use the social bookmarking site Digo, D-I-I-G-O, which was a pick I know of yours, one of the two of you, long time ago. And that's become my social bookmarking network. And I immediately have a little tool on my browser that I can just click on. And then I click on it once more, and it brings up the lists I have built in Digo. And I have categories of subjects and of, like, video converting tools, blogs. I have all kinds of categories. And I like to list them. I put them by, you know, by lists in that bookmarking area. And then that's how I know where they are. And then I also have a site here, a wiki, ELS Tech wiki here, that I immediately also go to and put it in the right category there, so people that are looking out there browsing for good stuff can find it. But that's part of my job is, you know, if you're a teacher, searching on the web for things can take hours when you're looking for a particular thing, or you're just grazing and finding things. But I try to do some of that work for the staff. That's part of what I do for them, and that's how I categorize the information. So hopefully it can be useful to them as well as myself.
Very cool. So it takes a little bit of work. I find myself using the favorites icon, which is part of Twitter, and you can use on TweetDeck as well, that allows me to just kind of set apart the ones that I think are favorites, especially if I'm on my iPod. And then maybe later when I'm on the web on a regular computer, I go back and do the bookmarking and things like that. But That's the one thing about it, is you're going to just be amazed and overwhelmed if you are a teacher, you know, with the amount of resources that you can find and tap into via a Twitter network. So be prepared to organize yourself somehow to keep up with all the good stuff that starts coming your direction.
One thing that I, and I'm not in the classroom on any regular basis, although I do a lot of workshops and those kinds of things, is it's helpful as a research or a news aggregator to kind of see what is going on within either your community or the world, or you know, something that would have some kind of impact on ministry. I wrote a blog post last month, I think it was, on Prop 8. Twitter has a kind of a trending, you know, most popular topics section right on the homepage, where you can see what a lot of people are Twittering about. So you can see what's hot. You know, obviously with the Iran stuff, that was, you know, very high on the list for a long time here the last couple weeks. But back in May, it was Prop 8. Prop 8 is the proposition in California that if you voted for Prop 8 in California, it was a vote against gay marriage. And then it was recently upheld by their state Supreme Court. So I thought it would be interesting to do a little research and did a search on Pound Prop 8. And Pound is a way to search across Twitter for topics that are of you know, of a particular nature around a particular topic. And just read through some of the tweets going on at that time on Prop 8. And it was a kind of an interesting study, as I noted in the blog post, that probably 90% were against Prop 8 versus pro Prop 8, and I raised the question, are there Christians on Twitter? But it was an informative search, because you could get a pulse for the community or for the Twitterverse or whatever it is that you're interested in about particular topics, what people are saying. And I think that's relevant in our ministry and knowing what world, you know, we live in and how potentially to minister to it and where people are coming from and how they think. So I think it's as much a research tool, I think, today as just a general search on the web it was a year ago, or Wikipedia or any of those kinds of things, because it's definitely real time and it gets you a sense for what, you know, what the world is talking about.
Right. Yes. I think you're absolutely right, because if you notice now on a lot of pages, sites that you go to, it will ask you if you want to you know, connect with that page. It'll give you the choice. Do you want to set up an RSS feed or Twitter?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that on more than one page now. And, you know, that's new. It didn't. It was always RSS, you know. But now you can do it either way.
I totally agree with you, Martin, that, you know, searching Twitter for trending topics is going to be, you know, the new way to go. I've even heard it said that it's going to replace Google as the king of search for trending topics, for things that are really happening right now. It's the place to look. And I see real applications for that in the classroom. If you're, you know, teaching current events or whatever it is, and you're trying to follow an event like the Iran uprising or whatever, you know, Twitter would be a place where you could get the really up-to-date information that's available.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, and some of these, I'm just looking at the trending topics right now, and some of these I have no idea what they are. Sometimes I don't want to know what they are, but sometimes they're very relevant. They're kind of front page stuff. And it's probably going to appear on Twitter before it appears in any newspaper or even some blogs at this point. So very timely. Obviously, the Iran election is on here. Wimbledon, which is a tennis tournament going on right now in London. I think it's very interesting just to watch that. So,
I think I found it to be a little bit sad sometimes, because you really feel like you get to know these people, you correspond with people about ideas, you know, quite a bit, and you don't know all that much about their background. But then when something like that gets introduced into the conversation and people start making comments, like the California proposition did come across a lot, and a lot of people spoke to that in my network, and I was like, and they spoke on the opposite side of me, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, oh,
right.
you know,
yep.
that's too bad.
Yep, absolutely. So
you know,
just noticed Ed McMahon died today. So
yeah,
he's at the top of the trending topics. So. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are going to continue the Twitter conversation in the classroom with a teacher, a third and fourth grade teacher from Omaha, Nebraska, Jason Schmidt, a regular listener and contributor to the show as far as comments, suggestions, and an avid tweeter. So we thought it would be great to have Jason join us and talk a little bit about his experiences with Twitter. And he makes a big point, as we've already mentioned, about using Twitter as this PLN, this personal learning network. So let's listen to our interview with Jason Schmidt, teacher from Omaha, Nebraska. Joining us today is Wells teacher Jason Schmidt from Omaha, Nebraska, third and fourth grade teacher. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Appreciate you taking out some time of your summer schedule. We hear a lot from you, and we thought that, boy, it would be great to have somebody on who's an active Twitter user. The show today is all about Twitter in the classroom. And you are a person that seems to have grabbed a hold of it and made use of it. So maybe before we jump into a Twitter conversation, let's talk a little bit about yourself. Tell us where you are, what your call is, and maybe your technology background and interests.
Well, I've been here at Gethsemane teaching third and fourth grade in Omaha, Nebraska, like you said. I've been here for going on 3 years now. I just finished my second year. Before that, I was in Clearwater, Florida, and I had a lot going on down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited to be here and having kind of an opportunity to work with technology and work with my colleagues and my students and trying to figure out ways to make more use of the technology that we have available. I just actually this summer started working on my master's degree in education technology, so this has kind of been a really good thing for me to get involved in Twitter and listening to the Wells Tech podcasts and RSS feeds and all the other sources of information that I've been getting. And it's just been really a great growing experience for me over the past several months or so.
Wonderful. Where are you studying? Where are you going to get the master's from?
I'm going to the University of Nebraska at Omaha.
Oh, okay. Is this online or do you go face-to-face on these?
It'll end up being a combination of things, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, everything has been face-to-face. And that part of it, being an ed tech person, I enjoy the distance learning things, but
mm-hmm.
the face-to-face, there really isn't much of a replacement for that.
That's right.
Either.
That's right.
Very good. Well, we know you as Jason Schmidt 123 on Twitter. So if anybody who's listening would like to follow you, that's a way to tap into all of your great Twitter tweets. Tell us how you got started with Twitter, Jason.
Well, actually, I can thank the Wells Tech podcast for that. You had a segment with Gail Potratz about PLNs a little while ago, and that kind of got me thinking about, well, you know, there are so many people out there, and there's so many interesting resources. I just don't really know very much about any of that stuff, but a great way to kind of incorporate that into my ministry and to incorporate that into my teaching, if there are so many other people out there who are so much smarter than I am, and just to be able to tap into those wonderful resources that people are being exposed to and they're seeing is just an amazing thing to me.
So you haven't had a lot of time to essentially get too deep into what Twitter can all do, but what have you used Twitter for? How have you seen Twitter work in your teaching capacity at this point?
Well, as far as my teaching goes, it's been a wonderful place for me to find resources that I can use to extend activities that I'm doing in the classroom. I find on a regular basis, I'll find things to help teach different content areas. There will be astronomy resources, or there will be language resources, or there will be literature or other writing activities or things like that to just kind of help do what I'm already doing, but maybe bring it home to the kids a little bit more in a more meaningful way and in a different and an exciting way.
How do you find those resources? Is it you just find people to follow that you think provide that good information, or do you do searches, or what's your methodology for grabbing that good stuff?
99% of the usefulness of Twitter is having useful people to follow. I think I sent a tweet out earlier, late last week or something like that, about how important it is to have good people to follow. If you find good people who share resources and who have things that are useful that they find useful in their classrooms, chances are, if they find something useful, you can also find it useful.
So I think that's maybe one of the pitfalls of people who get started with Twitter and are disappointed in it. I think you pointed to the key to the whole thing is to follow the right people. So if you're not seeing the value of Twitter, maybe you need to be following different people. And a good way to do that is to look at some of the people that you respect and look at who they follow, which is pretty easy to do on the Twitter site. And you can, gain from their list and add them as followers for yourself as well. So I think that's really important. What about student usage or offshoots of Twitter for classroom projects or that kind of thing? Do you have any ideas along those lines?
Well, when it comes to use in my classroom, I'm kind of scared. I have, I teach third and fourth graders, and, they're still kind of figuring out how to type and all of that kind of stuff. And, I could see the benefits of the real-time kind of interaction, especially going beyond the classroom. But I haven't quite been bold enough or brave enough to try and figure out how to do that in my room yet. I'm still kind of figuring out the best way for Twitter to work for me and how I can interact with it. Most of the time I spend just observing and seeing what other people have been putting out there. And, I add my little bit to the conversation every once in a while, but for the most part for me, it's been more of a take relationship than a give. So I've been struggling with how to implement that use in the classroom and how that might work. I'm really excited to see what Gail might have to say on the rest of the show and see how she could maybe come up with some ideas and how you guys could have some ideas on how to use that. I'm scared though.
Well, I think Gail does have some ideas along that line. So that'll be a neat tie-in to this conversation. What about for other teachers? Would this be something that you would recommend that they jump into using Twitter? And why or why not might it work for other people?
I would absolutely recommend it to anybody who is at all technologically minded. Some people see these kinds of things and they either say, oh, it's a big fad, or it's going to, it's here today, gone tomorrow. Or people might see it and be intimidated by the use of the technology. Like, oh man, I don't know if I want to put myself out there like that. But it has been an incredibly useful tool for me. I would have to say that the amount of learning that I've had since I've been on Twitter has just been incredible. It's making me a better teacher, and it's making me a better use of, it's helping me to make a better use of my talents and my abilities and my knowledge, and it's really, really been a good professional development tool for me. I think some of the pitfall that people sometimes fall into is, like I said, if you don't have high quality people that you're following, then it ends up being really just a huge waste of time. I've started following several people And after watching their updates for a couple of days, I'm just like, okay, I really don't care what you had for breakfast. It doesn't matter to me that you're going to the airport to pick up your father, or, you know, and I end up just unfollowing them because they don't have anything interesting to add. So the big value, like I said, comes in with who you follow.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you have the added benefit too of the search function within Twitter. You can, even if you don't follow people and you don't use the program, there are a lot of resources that are shared. And if you're looking for something, you can use that Twitter search and find links to resources that you're looking for. And it's almost like a refined Google search, because, you know, you're going through these millions of tweets, and it really has a high relevancy, I've discovered.
Now, I noticed, Jason, that you're following 155 people at this point. How do you find those people, or do they find you, or what's your methodology for that?
The way that I started, actually, was I started with a list of recommendations off of the Free Technology for Teachers website.
Yeah, sweet.
There are 10 or 15 teachers that he suggested to follow on Twitter. And I started there, and then from there, I just kind of, you know, I interacted a little bit with each of them, got to know them a little bit, they got to know me, and then I asked a couple of them to give me a shout out, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, I received probably about 75 people contacted me and said, hey, you know, I'll follow you. And then I followed them back, and that's been an incredible
mm-hmm.
That was an incredible way for me to get started on that. That really was a big help for me in finding people to follow.
So is this a new thing for you? Had you used Facebook and other social networks before? You'd done any blogging, or was this just your kind of inaugural foray into this kind of thing?
You know, I used to hate anything social media. I thought it was a really big, it could be a big time sucker. It could be a waste of time. It wasn't something that I was interested in. It was something that I thought could be incredibly dangerous, you know, especially for kids who putting personal information out there and those kinds of things. I've taken a complete 180 on it, though. In a short amount of time, I joined the Classroom 2.0 Ning, and I joined Facebook, and I started doing Twitter and all of these things. And I really just have done a total 180 on my attitude towards these things. They're, you know, they're wonderful tools. They're wonderful ways to keep in touch with people and to really grow.
Wonderful.
So, Jason, I'm just curious about your methodologies. Do you use the Twitter site, or do you use some other add-in programs or Twitter clients, basically? And also, you know, how is it that you work this into all the things you have to do? Is it one more thing you have to do, or is it pretty integrated with your day? Do you check your Twitter just once a day or multiple times, that kind of thing?
Well, I don't find Twitter's website very user-friendly. I think that if that was all that they had, then the service would be pretty useless.
Mm-hmm.
But I use TweetDeck, and that has been just a fantastic thing for me, because now I can kind of separate the people that I'm following into different groups. You know, I have a group of teachers that I follow, and those are only educators that are in that group. So, you know, when I want to see something from my teachers, I can go into the teachers column. Or, you know, I have an open source group that I follow too. I like open source. Free is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I find out about some resources through that, and anybody who has something to do with open source, I put into that column. So I find TweetDeck is really, really helpful for me in keeping organized. As far as how I check in and when I get in on it, it's really been integrated into part of my day. I start out working on it in the morning. You know, I'll drink my coffee and kind of read my RSS feeds, and I'll read my tweets, and go through all of that stuff, and then I kind of just let it alone for the rest of the day and come back to it in the evening. And that seems to be working out really well for me. If I ever, while I'm teaching, if I ever have a question or something like that, usually I can shoot something out. You know, it takes less than 5 seconds to type 140 characters. And then I usually will get responses within, 10 minutes, and then I can come back to it and check just for those responses. And it's really, really super easy. But it's become an integrated part of my day. My wife kind of makes fun of me sometimes for checking my tweets. I'll sitting in the kitchen drinking my coffee, and she says I look kind of funny, but.
We're not going to make fun of you, Jason, here at least.
Oh, I appreciate that.
In fact, we do very much appreciate you using the pound Wells Tech tag, because that lets us in on what you're thinking, and especially as it relates to classroom technology. So keep those coming. We appreciate that. And we certainly appreciate you taking the time today to share a little bit with us, and we look forward to continuing to follow you and your contributions to the show. Appreciate that very much.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to contribute to the conversation in a more vocal way.
That's what it's all about. Thanks, Jason, so much.
Thank you.
Once again, thank you, Jason, for joining us, and keep listening. We appreciate all of your feedback, very active in that, and that's what makes this show go. Jason had a number of links that we'll also include in the show notes, right, Sally?
That's right. He mentioned a free technology for teachers blog post. It was from back in December. We were able to dig it up, and it has some great education people to follow on Twitter. So if you're just getting started and building your network, that's a good place to start. And just like Jason said, you got to follow some people for a little while and see what you like and don't like, and you can always unfollow people. So start there and springboard off of that to build up your own personal learning network. Jason also had a follow-up email to us, some things he meant to mention. He said maybe he hadn't had enough coffee or maybe enough Twitter reading in his morning yesterday when we recorded the interview. But he did mention that he uses Digo a lot, and that's what Gail was referencing earlier in our conversation, that he organizes all the links and great sites that he finds from Twitter with Digo. And one thing about Digo is that it's a social site as well. So if there are others who are using Digo and would like to share links, we'll have a link in our show notes to Jason's Digo account, and maybe you want to friend him there and share your links with Jason online. So.
Isn't everything a social site these days?
Yeah, another way to connect.
Yeah,
it's confusing after a while.
Yeah, you can log into almost anything at this point and share it with anybody. So got to choose those wisely. But I have not used Digo. I'm going to have to check that out. I've used Delicious for a number of years now, and that served me pretty well. But this sounds interesting. All right, let's go on to our new technology showcase. Again, we had a lot to choose from. We're going to focus on something very specific to Apple and the iPhone/iPod Touch, and that's this 3.0 OS upgrade that was launched this past week. And Sally and Gail, did you download your updates?
I did.
I sure have, and yes. How about you, Martin?
I did as well for the iPhone, and went smoothly. I had no issues, and I don't know that there were a lot of issues out there. And what are your impressions?
Well, for me, one of the things I was most excited about was having Bluetooth capabilities so that I could get one of those cool, headsets so I look like a Borg or whatever from Star Trek.
Worthy goal, Sally, yes.
Yeah. Somebody said, you're not Borg unless you're wearing leather, and no, I'm not wearing leather, so I guess I'm not totally there. But
it's
anyway.
Too hot.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe this winter we'll get Sally in leather.
I bet not. But anyway, unfortunately, I haven't managed to pair my headset with my iPod Touch. Apparently, my husband was telling me a little bit of iPod Touch history, and that someone had taken apart the Touch, and the Bluetooth was there all along. It's just something they hadn't activated on the iPod Touch in the past. And so now that they've activated it, it's having some issues pairing with Bluetooth devices. So I'm hoping that Apple's addressing that, and that very quickly we'll be able to use like a Bluetooth headset with our iPod Touch. And when you do that, then you're able to record voice memos and email them and things like that. So
I see your angle.
Opens up
okay.
A whole new avenue for recording and stuff on your Touch. My husband has a wired headset that has the recording capabilities, but I was looking for the wireless. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that that'll get resolved.
Okay. Gail, how about you? Anything on your upgrade?
I haven't tried anything nearly as complicated as Sally.
Okay.
She's way geekier than I am.
I'll go ahead, Gail.
I just, like I said, I was a little disappointed in the, I'm not a texter. I don't even like to type in the password when I use my iPod Touch because I find it difficult to type on that kind of keyboard. Right, and they really said, you know, that now you can landscape it and it's bigger and whatnot, and it is better, but I had finally learned how to cram my fingers on those little buttons and go kind of fast, and now I got to rethink my process, so I have to reteach myself.
I've been pretty impressed with the keyboard. I was very suspect when I got the iPhone initially, and I can't say I can type still as fast as I could with a regular, you know, like a Palm keyboard or things that I've had in the past, but I've learned that you have to trust the phone a little bit more than I was used to, where it will predictively get you probably 90% of the way there. So if you mistype a letter or two, it almost always now corrects it for me. So and that really works. So you just type, and then you'll look at the sentence that you typed, and pretty much it's got it, which is great. So I enjoy that. One thing I did notice with the 3.0 upgrade, I think my battery life is lousy now, and it was good before. So hopefully that will improve itself. My Bluetooth works great, and that was one of the things I was looking forward to, is being able to use that in the car, because I have a Bluetooth-enabled car stereo. And now I don't have to plug in the cable that plugs into the jack on the stereo, so I'm totally Bluetooth that way. The only problem is I share my car with my son. He's also got an iPhone, and we have pairing wars. So when I'm paired, he can't, and when he's paired, then it just creates a mess. So I put my foot down and said, you know, you have to use the cable. I get to use Bluetooth because it's my car.
This is the family issues we deal with.
That is. We never had to deal with that before, did we?
Gee. Well, I'd be
no Bluetooth wars.
Didn't mention the copy-paste feature that's part of 3.0. Yeah. I love that. I've used that. And the search feature. There's a whole new screen in your home screen that allows you to search across the entire iPod. So I really like that feature as well.
Okay. Very good. So those of you without iPhones or iPod Touches, this is probably a meaningless conversation, but still, the technology is advancing, and I think these kinds of upgrades are good for everybody because everybody's phone gets better as a result. And when we talk about the iPhone, we can also talk about the Android phone, and we can talk about the Palm Pre. And I think, you know, within a couple of years, almost everybody will have some kind of smartphone, and that's beneficial. I think that those are productivity tools that are becoming more and more a part of what we do. Anybody who works with information is going to benefit from the ability to use these smartphones and have that information with them. I can't tell you how many times I look up stuff while I'm on the road or in a restaurant or whatever because I have the capability to do that. So good stuff. Let's move quickly then on to our picks of the week. Gail, you're kind of a guest yet, so Gail, why don't we let you go first?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Share This, because I think that it will connect a little better with our conversation, and more people might be ready for it than group tweet, which was my other option.
No, so you snuck in kind of a side pick there too. All right, you're catching on.
Yes. So share this is handy because Sally had asked during the interview or during our discussion here. She had asked me what I do when I find good stuff, where mm-hmm. I put it, and I mentioned two things. There's actually a third one. And I use a little tool called Share This. It's just sharethis.com. Mm-hmm. And what it is a little feature for your browser. You can put a little icon right up in your browser. And then when you have a web page in front of you, you've Twittered a good idea comes across Twitter. You click on the link. You open it up. You look at it. You go, oh, man, so-and-so could really use this. So all I have to do is go and hit this little green square that's Share This, and a box comes up, and I can use my email. I can use Facebook. I can use Google Mail. There's about 30, I don't know. There's a bunch of applications you could use. I always just use email. And then I can just email and I have my contacts put in there. You can just import your contacts into there from your email. And then I can instantly send out good stuff. And I'll probably do the other two things with it too, but this way I send it to some specific person right away that I know is really going to appreciate it. So that's what I like about Share This connected with my use of Twitter.
So it kind of mashes up all of your contacts is a sense that I get. I have not seen this or tried this before. No. I'm just looking through it now. So you import all your contacts from wherever, and with a click of a button, you can grab whoever you want from whatever source. Now, will it send it as a post to your wall, or will it tweet for you, those kinds of things, or is it strictly just an email kind of a thing?
I personally have just used it as an email thing, so I can't even answer that for you, Martin. Mm-hmm. If it will go through Twitter or not, I really don't know. I would imagine so.
It looks interesting. It certainly makes sense. Because most browsers have a forward this link or some kind of application built into it, but this I think centralizes it a little bit. So, cool.
Yeah.
Again, the social stuff, huh?
Yep.
Very good, Sally. What's your pick?
My pick is an iPhone application or iPod Touch application. It's TweetDeck for iPhone. We've talked about TweetDeck in the past. It's basically a Twitter client that does a lot better job of Twitter than Twitter does itself. Allows you to organize your different following and build search criteria and also groups of people that have things in common so that you can see a better slice of your Twitter feed and that kind of thing. And now they have a version for the iPhone. I believe it just came out within the last week or so. And I've heard a lot of positive comments in Twitter, via Twitter, from the people that I follow about TweetDeck for iPhone. So I had to try it out. One thing that I really like is that it syncs back and forth. Your account in TweetDeck on your desktop computer or your laptop computer and your account in TweetDeck on the iPhone are constantly synchronized. And before I was using an application on the iPhone called Twitter Phone, and it doesn't have any of that syncing capability like TweetDeck does. So this is a pretty powerful tool in that regard. And it's just a really nice interface. You can do things a lot easier, like retweet and send direct messages and things like that. And like I said, you can organize your the people that you follow into different categories and things. So I have a Wells Tech category for the people that I follow connected with our show, and it's right there on my iPod so that I can easily access it and focus in on those feeds, for the people that I follow through Wells Tech as an example. So I recommend TweetDeck for iPhone, and we'll have a link in our show notes.
So, Sally, do you use TweetDeck on your desktop or laptop machine as well?
I have. I haven't been real actively using it, but I think now that I have the pairing of the iPhone app and the desktop app, I think I'll be using it more.
Well, how did you follow Twitter-type accounts or tweet when you're at your desktop, or did you always do it through your iPod Touch?
I was just using the Twitter website. Experiencing some frustrations because it's just really limited what you do there. And
right.
So, but I wasn't quite ready to make the jump to a full-fledged client. I felt like maybe that was just one more thing.
That's the way I feel, kind of. Yeah. So I integrated I integrate my tweets into Outlook, which is where I spend a lot of my time. So I don't have to jump a couple of different places. I've tried TweetDeck. As I recall, it's an Adobe Air application for Windows.
Yes.
I don't know what is it for. Is that way for the Mac as well, Gail?
I believe so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's what you use, correct?
Yes. I switched to that. I used to use, sometimes I still use Seismic.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about that none of the other ones do, is when you get a new tweet, it actually pops out right in the lower. If you're on your desktop, it pops out right in the lower on your screen. So if you're working, you can just all of a sudden see it, and you maybe don't read it, but you can see who it's from, and then sometimes I stop everything and get in there and read it.
See, that's what I do whenever I install a new operating system or install any application that wants to notify me. I say, don't notify me. That is a big productivity killer for me, because Outlook, when you install Outlook, that it defaults to that. So every time you get an email, it pops up with a notification window in the lower right. TweetDeck does that. There's all kinds of apps that do that. And I said, if there's something that important that I need to stop everything and go grab it, then somebody needs to call me. That's not going to be the way that I could probably chase those down every 5 minutes. And I'm not wired enough to ignore that when I really need to be focused. So I have to discipline myself. But some people love that. You know, they can multitask all over the place. They can discern what's important, what's not. But I would get nothing done. So, TweetDeck. Thanks, Sally. Great mm-hmm. pick. I'm gonna have to revisit that. Obviously, I have a iPhone, so I could do that. I have not. I use something called Nambu, which does the same thing, and I like it because it integrates other things like FriendFeed and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It's not just for Twitter, but I'll have to take a look at that, see if that does it for me. My pick is also Twitter related, and it's a Twitter directory called Twello, and I'm beginning to dislike all the TW
the I was TW anxious to hear you pronounce
there.
That one.
Twello, yes. Twello.com. It is a Twitter directory, and this is great if you're looking to build up a network or looking for interesting people to follow, because it categorizes all the users on, or not all the users, but those that are a part of the network or in the directory. And it actually does some smart categorization based on profile information. So you can add yourself to Twello. You don't really need a Twello account, but you can just log in with your Twitter username and password and plug yourself into the appropriate places in the directory. So if you go to Twello, you can find all kinds of areas of interest that might be up your alley. For instance, there's a whole education section. We're talking about education in the classroom here, or Twitter in the classroom. And there's a grouping called teachers. And if you drill down into the teachers category, it even breaks that down further into early childhood educators, of which there are 212 people in that category. You have instructors, you have K-12 teachers, you have trainers. You can do searches, and right away, right there on the page, you can follow them if you're logged in. You can see how many followers they have, which is usually a good indicator of maybe how relevant their posts are and how active they are. And you can see what their location is, so if you're interested in only following people that are local, you can do searches on that. You can view their full profile right there. It's just a good way to organize Twitter into, it's kind of the Twitter yellow pages in essence. So they have an option there called Twello Hood, which is a neighborhood of Twitter users by location. You can see your friends, followers. I think they've done a nice job. There is advertising on it, but I don't think it's overly intrusive. So if you're just looking for topics or trying to find like-minded people who have good things to say on Twitter, Twello might be something to check out.
I think a good way to BuildYourPLN, Personal Learning Network. And I definitely am going to check that one out, Martin.
All right. I hope everybody had a chance to listen to our first BWTG podcast. That's not a new podcast, but that's a new segment that we've added just for the summer here to give you a little bonus Wells Tech goodness. Last Monday, if you subscribe to this feed as opposed to just downloading it from the internet or whatever, playing it online, you would have received this automatically, and you heard us talk about Google Calendar. This is our little attempt at providing something very practical over the summer, a step-by-step approach to some of these technologies that we might find or you might find useful in your ministry somehow. And we would love to hear back from you if you had any comments from that. And Sally, we did hear back from a number of users already, even though it was just posted a day ago.
That's right. Lots of Twitter feedback. We got some feedback on Facebook and via email as well. So that was really encouraging. We heard from some new voices, Jason Potowski, who asked some questions about whether you could actually use Google Calendar on your Final Web website. And the answer to that is yes, you can. Final Web certainly provides a calendar, but maybe you're looking for more of the collaboration and the more of the functionality that's part of the Google Calendar. So you could certainly use it on your Final Web website in place of the calendar that comes with Final Web. I picked up an interesting post, somebody basically tweeting about the Bonus Wells Tech Goodness podcast, and it was from St. Peter's Church in, I believe, Fort Collins, Colorado. And I really like what they're doing with their Twitter accounts, pretty simple Twitter account, where they just basically share devotional resources, podcasts, that kind of things that are coming out of the Wells website. So all during the day, people that follow them are getting fed with, here's a family devotion, here's a teen devotion, here's a Wells Tech podcast on Google Calendars, you know. And so I thought that was a really neat way for a congregation to spread the word, the good word.
Yeah, if your congregation is thinking of trying to use Twitter in some way, shape, or form, and we had a whole show on this or a whole topic on this not too long ago, there's a good example. St. Peter Wells is their Twitter name. And they don't have a lot of followers, but I assume their intent is to get their congregation members engaged with this and have this as yet another communications channel. And that can't be a bad thing where people are getting updates on a regular basis from their church. They're interested in what their church has to say, and I think they're doing a nice job with what they're posting there. Nice job.
And one more that's worth mentioning was from Rob Freeburn. He wrote and said, we embed a Google Calendar in our church website for public information such as worship times, and we have a separate Google Calendar for birthday reminders. So, and he also mentioned that he's used Yahoo calendaring with equal success. So thanks for those comments, and we'd love to hear from others and hear your ideas of what you'd like to see us cover on Bonus Wells Tech Goodness.
Next week, if all goes well, we'll be talking about Google Reader, my absolute favorite RSS reader. It helps me kind of stay connected, and almost everything that I read on the internet flows somehow through that reader if I'm interested in it at all. So tune in next week for a step-by-step setup and usage of Google Reader. Lots of stuff there. Speaking of feedback, we had a bunch of feedback from last week. Sally, let's dive in and run through this.
Yeah, we heard from Jeremy Johnson in a couple of ways. First of all, he wrote to let us know that he was a Narnia fan, and that was something I was sharing with you last week on our show, Martin, that The Last Battle was one of his five favorite books of all time, and he got a real kick out of hearing us talk about it because he had just been talking about it with a friend, and then he listened to our podcast. So, hey, you just never know what you're going to hear on the Wells Tech podcast.
Yep.
The other thing I wanted to share from Jeremy is a link to his blog post where he followed up on my pick of the week last week was an article from Lifehacker with essential Windows programs that are available for free download. And he took that list and added to it some of his own preferences and things, and I think you'd find it a good read. And Jeremy's definitely a tech leader in the Milwaukee area in our Wells churches, and we're just happy to have him commenting in that way. Another comment on our show notes site was actually posted by me, and it was a link to a new Common Craft video called Twitter Search in Plain English. Last week, Gail, you had a comment and question about how to use the hashtag to do searching on Twitter. And just, I guess, Common Craft, being the good people that they are, must have tuned in to your needs, and they created this video just for you. And it's really well done, as are all their videos. If you're a listener to Wells Tech, you know I'm a fan of their videos. Minute, 2 minutes or so, you have a really great visual explanation of some really kind of complex technology. So if you're still trying to figure out Twitter search, you might want to check out the video Twitter Search in Plain English. Next up, we had some discussions on our listserv. Again, Gail, I think you had asked a question about stock video available for use in congregations, and I came across a blog post with some links to different free stock video that's out on the web, and so that's posted out on the Wells Tech listserv. And there were other questions about privatizing areas of a final website and how to maybe set up a subsite and make it password protected so that anybody that wants to look at that subsite is going to need to know the password. And hopefully that's going to address some of the issues related to privatizing content. We had an awesome email from Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith in Fond du Lac, and he just kind of commented on everything, Martin. Got a lot of great information from Ryan. I love his first comment.
He saved it up, yeah.
Yeah, ties right in with our conversation today. He says he just doesn't get Twitter as a teacher and everything. Hopefully, this podcast is going to help him, but he said it basically just turns into something else he has to do and and check. And I think the bottom line there, Ryan, is maybe you aren't following the right people. And so build up your list of who to follow, and you'll start seeing the results that Gail and Jason have been talking about today. He also commented that he's used both Learn 360 and United Streaming. We recently did a show about video in the classroom, and he says he's definitely a fan of downloading the video ahead of time and running it off of your local hard drive instead of via the internet. And he did mention that he thought United Streaming has a greater selection of videos, but some of them are old and outdated. So just, you know, be careful as you're making your choices. Make sure to preview them and things like that. He also encouraged us to exercise caution when you're using videos from alternate locations, because many of them start with commercials and things. And actually, probably a good time to make mention, we'll just kind of interject, that Jason Schmidt tweeted something this morning about YouTube Chop, which allows you to cut out a part of a YouTube video. So kind of ties in with what Ryan's talking about here, where you can actually zero in on a particular section of a YouTube video instead of showing everything that's a part of it. Maybe you just want a few seconds of it or whatever. So we'll have a link in the show notes to this YouTube Chop that Jason was recommending this morning on Twitter. Let's see, what else did Ryan have to say? You can back up data to old hard drives. You can actually install old hard drives in existing computers so that you have a separate hard drive within the computer. And in their school, they've also used iOmega's NAZ drive, or NAS drive, for backups. He discovered that their email also allows users to upload files for online storage. So maybe your internet service provider is providing some cloud storage capabilities as well. He's got AT&T, and they get quite a bit of storage, and the maximum upload file size is 25 meg. So that's pretty good.
Yep.
In regard to our going on the road show, Ryan recommends taking along extra batteries for all your devices and for your kids' toys. So if your kids are being entertained with something that requires batteries, make sure you have a stash with you at all times. And then finally, in relation to printers, Martin, last week your pick was a hardware pick, a printer. He says that HP has a buyback program. He hasn't tried it, but he says that they'll give you a discount for your old machines, whether they're working or not. So if you're buying HP printers, maybe you want to check that out.
Cool.
Let's
see. Thanks. Is that it for Ryan?
I think that's it for Ryan. Lots of good
Thanks,
stuff.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that. That's great stuff.
And one more comment we wanted to share was from Alan Bunt. Alan just tweeted that we should consider doing a video podcast. Obviously, our Wells Tech podcast is an audio podcast, although our most recent bonus Wells Tech goodness, we posted some video tutorials online. But he's saying maybe you want to use screencasting and Skype and different things to record video and post those on the Wells Tech podcast. So what do you think of that, Martin?
He has not visited our profile page and looked at our pictures.
I was going to say, no. Don't do it on my week.
Definitely got a face for radio, huh?
We'll take that under advisement, Alan. How about that?
All right.
We have the technology. I'm not sure we have all the rest that goes along with that. All right, great. I wanted to mention one other tweet that I saw. And I follow Brad Wheeling, who we've had on the show before, who is the program manager for Shepherd Staff. And he tweeted the other day, he's looking for beta testers for Shepherd Staff 2010, which is their new, which they're obviously going to release next year. So if you are interested, you can send a tweet to CTS Brad, that would be at CTS Brad, if you're interested in maybe testing or becoming a beta tester for Shepherd Staff 2010. He doesn't make any promises. Sometimes with these beta test programs, you get a discount on the upgrade, but all of our Shepherd Staff users should be in the software maintenance package or the support package, which gives you that free upgrade anyway. But if you're interested in seeing what 2010 holds, make sure you let Brad know at the Shepherd Staff headquarters there in St. Louis, Missouri. That's all the feedback we had. Yes, Sally?
Yeah, I think we made it to the end of the list.
That's enough. Yeah, we're running overtime on the show, but that's okay. Lots of good stuff about Twitter, and we love having Gail on the show as well. Speaking of the show, we will be talking about Web 2.0 for Wells.net next week. We're going to give you a little sneak preview of where Wells.net is going and how we're using some online tools to both save some money and go a little bit more Web 2.0 mainstream with how we're doing images and how we're going to do the Together newsletter and video and streams and all that good stuff. So that's what's up next week. We'll talk about Wells.net going Web 2.0, so please tune in then. Gail, thank you for joining us once again. It was a pleasure having you.
You're welcome. I always enjoy it.
Good. And Sally, as always, thanks for your great contributions to the show. Could not be done without you. Those of you that have signed up for the feed, and we would encourage everybody to do that, go to iTunes and search for Wells Tech and grab the feed there, and you can get these BWTG episodes right in your feed reader of sorts, whatever it is, and on your iPod and listen to us wherever you go. Let's close the show as we always do with featured Wells musician. This week we feature the music of Mike Wessendorf as we listen to his song I Will Sing from his album Climb the Mountain. Thanks everybody for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Let the people praise you.
Praise you.
Let the heavens praise you.
Praise you.
We rejoice and praise you. Blessings that we have known. Thank you for all the mercies that you have shown. Praise you for the amazing gift of God's great love. We praise you for sending heaven's peace from above. I will sing of the Lord's great love forever, making His faithfulness to all generations. Let the people praise you. Let the heavens praise you. We rejoice and praise. from whom all the blessings flow. Praise Him, mighty creatures here below. Praise Him, all ye heavenly hosts, praise Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. I will sing of the Lord's great love forever, making known His faithfulness to all generations. Let the people praise You. Let the heavens praise You. We rejoice and praise You. I will sing of the Lord's great love forever, making known His faithfulness to all generations. Let the people praise You. Let the heavens praise You.